All right, welcome everybody to Collaborative Effort. This is going to be a one-on-one episode. My guest today is Tracy Pugh Jr. I am Anthony Hadley Jr. I brought Tracy on today because we're going to talk about a few different things, namely health, wealth, and wellness, and as many of their different forms as we can cover today, because that just happens to be a lot of what he and I discuss, whether it's physical health, mental health, financial health, spiritual health. He can see on my table that I am gearing up to start working on my physical health. I have all these paleo magazines, a Primal Blueprint, and the packaging for my new Instant Pot and NutriBullet. So we would definitely talk about physical health, which is something I know I could stand to learn and talk a lot more about. And I'm sure most people feel that way. But before we jump into it, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, Tracy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show, Anthony. I'm Tracy Pugh. I'm in the business world, actually in health and wellness. I have a franchise, which smoothies and acai bowls and juices. I'm an avid runner myself. Played sports my whole life. The whole deal. Got up early, weightlifted, played basketball, played football. But went up to college as far as I went. So I have a decent amount of, I guess you would say, worldly experience when it comes to health. But it's tough. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and lie. I mean, my weight go up and down. I mean, you get busy in life. You start eating bad, start eating the fried food. But this is cool. This is passionate to my heart because I've actually changed my diet over the last few years. I was a little bit about myself. Went to San Jose State. I'm currently in business, working on my podcast, writing.
What is your podcast called?
I need a name at this moment. I may have a name when this airs, but. You know, I'm Tracy Pugh. Look me up under that name. All right. But he keeps asking me that, by the way.
Yeah, I'm putting him on the spot.
I was a pescatarian for 4 years, and I recently.
For those of us who don't know what that is, can you please tell us what
that
is?
So I just ate seafood. So I ate basically anything in the water. I didn't eat anything on land. No. And I ate dairy. Actually, I take that back. So I was a pescatarian for 4 years. So I did dairy, eggs, and seafood stuff like shrimp, salmon. Thought I was doing something, you know, I thought I was making a difference. And then I'm about 5 months into being a plant-based vegan, I would say. The only reason I won't say completely vegan because, you know, there's once you say vegan, you know, if you have anything with dairy, you know, it's pretty. So I would say I would say 95% of the time I don't have anything that's animal related.
Quick overview for us. For those that don't know what it really consists of, what it excludes, and what the benefits of it are.
Okay, so I would say we'll start with vegan. So vegan is no animal products at all. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. No dairy, no cheese, vegetarian, because vegetarians can have dairy and eggs. Vegans, everything has to be plant-based. The reason I say plant-based is because I'm not strictly vegan because sometimes there's dairy. It may contain milk. That's right. Pretty much what I would say. Like you have products, like you might get some chips or you may, and I'm not healthy, by the way. I'm not a healthy vegan, by the way. I love all the fried tofu, but
you are probably more representative of the average demographic that may want to try it because a lot of these, I don't know, I wouldn't call them nutritional plans, but these ways of eating are very strict, and I feel like anything strict is going to be very difficult for somebody to jump into brand new. So it's perfect for somebody like you that isn't a healthy vegan to explain this.
Yeah, you know, that's great you brought that up. So honestly, I was really scared because, you know, the biggest issue is, I'm going to address this off the top, it's a social issue. So say me and Anthony went out to dinner or went out to lunch. He's going to pick a restaurant. I'm going to pick a restaurant. Most likely the restaurant he's picked is going to have
Korean
one or two
barbecue.
Options for me. What you going to eat?
Korean barbecue.
Korean barbecue. So I might be able to eat the rice. Maybe the vegetables. So, and that was the biggest issue. Honestly, in 2018, there's so many vegan restaurants that have tofu that tastes like chicken.
But we're also speaking while we live in Los Angeles. Because true. It's not the same everywhere. But go ahead. Go ahead.
So, yeah, I guess New York, Los Angeles, Colorado, you know, those type places where, you know, there's a lot more. They're more vegan friendly states. So yeah, California it's pretty easy to go to Veggie Grill. You know, native foods. I mean, there's a lot of food trucks. So that's the hard part. What I would say is, like, you know, my girl's not vegan, so I give some examples. One of our biggest things is what we're gonna eat. She eats not everything, because she's gonna probably go get, if she hears this, she don't eat everything, but she eats animals products and animals. So I don't. So when we pick a restaurant to eat, she's always like, where can you eat? It's the first thing right. She says. So and that's the issue with everyone, like my family, my friends, it's like, where can you eat? Because, and there's only, even though the LA has a lot of places, there's still only a handful of places I can eat. I can't eat at most mom and pop, because if I'm vegan, I don't even do things that contain milk or have dairy products or cheese or anything like that. So it gets deep. And so, I'm not making it a religion.
So tell us some of the benefits, whether they're social, cultural, or physical, to a plant-based or vegan or vegetarian
diet. I'm going to try to answer your question this time. Last time I did. Some of the benefits. So honestly, I may have been lactose intolerant. So I believe
I feel like that's very common, especially for like African American.
Yes, it is. And I tell people all the time, don't become a vegan if you don't want to, which all the vegan world is probably like, what? Mm-hmm. Get rid of the dairy. Because honestly, when I stopped the dairy the first week or minimized it, I literally felt better. Like, I had more energy. I felt good. Like, my stomach wasn't like bloated or anything. And I didn't feel that super full feeling you get when you eat. I didn't get that. Like, I was full, but I wasn't like uncomfortable. And that was one of the first things. Like I said, I was a pescatarian for a long time. So people go, well, you know, it was a lot easier for you. But no, I noticed that instantly. Like, if you gave up dairy for a week, even if you ate everything else, you're going to see it instantly. And I challenge anyone to try that. And what was the other question? What
socially, culturally, and physically. Physically is probably the most important.
Physically, people say, oh, they lost all this weight. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't lose a bunch of weight. Maybe I maintained, I would say, because I still eat the fried stuff. You know, if you go completely raw food vegan, when you're just eating the plants and, you know, the smoothies, you eat like any diet. I haven't been eating clean vegan. So if you're eating a clean, non-vegan or vegan, you're going to see results. So I haven't gained any weight, but I haven't lost any weight. But like I said, the dairy, I felt that. Socially, you know, picking restaurants, eating at home, cooking, you know, people going to look at you weird. They're going to ask you a bunch of questions, why you don't eat this, you know. People don't care about what you eat until you go vegan. I'll tell you that much right now.
Right.
Everybody cares about my health, my protein. They think I'm just going to fly away.
People don't really, they're not concerned with a lot of actions until your actions make them uncomfortable.
Exactly. So maybe people feel like I'm judging them, but I'm not. I mean, clearly, I tell people all the time, I was ready to make that jump. I thought about this for years, so this wasn't anything new. Socially, being an African American male, I mean, I would say, I mean, most of the fried food we eat is fried chicken and, you know, fried fish. So it's tough going to, I mean, I had a block party. My grandma had a block party, probably the one of the only counties to have a block party still in Los Angeles.
Right.
Went there, you know, but I knew I couldn't eat the barbecue. I couldn't eat the ribs. I couldn't eat the chicken. So I had to stop by and get me something from Veggie Grill on the way and get my little tofu burger.
Couldn't do it to yourself.
So everybody looking at me like, what you doing? I'm like, hey, man, I didn't feel like coming here and telling people what I don't eat, what I can't eat. So you kind of know, like, I know where I can go and eat and where I need to bring my own food, I would say. But yeah, I didn't even think I was going to talk about this, but it's definitely been a big change. I mean, this will be my first Thanksgiving and Christmas will be my first major holiday. So we'll see how those go.
Be tough. Thanksgiving. God bless this man.
Yeah.
So tell me, I don't know where this is going to play into, but I know you have a series that you're working on called Life After Football. Mm. I know for any athlete, especially men, because most of us don't eat that well for a long time, we depended on those lifestyles to counterbalance our unhealthy habits. Mm. But when that lifestyle and playing a major sport is no longer a part of your life, there's definitely a sharp corner to turn in terms of health, whether it's like actually physically doing stuff or even just having the support around you, people pushing you to eat a certain weight, eat at a certain time, or to be in the gym. So how, since this is something that you're working on in your series, how have you just made that transition? One is just from becoming an adult, and then two, not being an athlete anymore, playing a sport. I mean, because you can still be an athlete. How have you made that transition into maintaining a healthy lifestyle outside of just nutrition?
Okay, so me and Eric Nall are actually working on a series right now. We've done one. We've done a few videos right now, but life after football. So we're focused on the athlete. And basically, sum it all up, we're saying the athlete is more than football, or the athlete is more than athletics. So it's not just for football, baseball, basketball, etc. For myself personally, I would say there's a transition period from when you play the sport since 7-8 years old and you end your sport around 24, 25, if you play college and potentially pro for the lucky few who make it that far, there's a transitional period. What do I do next? I didn't play this sport my whole life. I didn't been around football. I didn't been around films. I didn't been around weights. All I eat football. I sleep football. Or I eat basketball. That's all I do is ball. That's it. So what do? I go get a job. Do I apply for a CEO position? Do I start my own business? Do I go to grad school? And you look around, and I got immediately into the business world. So my transition was like, it was kind of similar because there's a team atmosphere, I'm working long hours, so I felt the correlation. But I'm looking around at my friends and people, you know, I played with, and I'm looking at the challenges, I would say. I try to be real detailed with my words because the words are powerful. The challenges that occurred with the athlete, like, how does the athlete get a job? You know, I have no work experience.
Right.
My experience is I got a scholarship. I have a degree. I have probably none or few internships. Maybe I finished my degree, maybe not. And only thing I really know is football. So my mentality is football. My work ethic, which companies love, is football, but they don't want the mentality that comes with it. So that's right. The issue. You don't want a guy coming in there talking about we gonna make this happen, baby. Let's go. You know, everybody gonna be looking at him like, whoa,
security.
You know, calm down. So the challenges that occurred, and it was just I was just looking like, dang, like, why does every football player they're in the same category? Why don't we see, you know, football players going into these jobs that are making $80,000 to $100,000 a year? Why are they struggling? You know, I'm looking around. I mean, a lot of my former teammates are, you know, I don't believe they're doing as well as they would have been doing if they just went and got a degree. And that's just, maybe I'm biased.
Because I will, to speak to that, I feel like to achieve any level of a career as a college athlete, like, you have to be very disciplined. You have to be very driven. You have to be strong mentally as well as physically. So those things should translate into the work world. So yeah, I get what you're saying, because in a lot of senses, they should be top candidates for a lot of positions. But that's not relegating the fact that they need the preparation and the education for it. But just for a regular job, yeah, like, they should be great candidates for it. So that does raise a good question.
Yeah, you look at these guys. I mean, you can look around. Look up and see what one of your favorite football players who didn't make the pro. See what they're doing. And I guarantee you, majority of them are probably not doing anything that you'd be like, man, you doing that? Like, I thought you would be. They doing things where they can't even support their family. I'm just going to be out and say it. They got jobs that's not even covering their expenses, their family expenses. Mentally, how this ties in. So my mentality when I graduate from high school is I'm going to college. I'm getting a degree. Either I'm going to graduate and get a job, or I'm going to the pros. Pretty much it. You talk to any college player in America, I'm sure those are the two things they have in mind. So the people we all know, the 2% that don't make the NFL, go to the workforce. If they get a degree, we'll say that finished school. Well, why is it that these athletes aren't able to get these jobs to support themselves? You know, and it's like, and the reason is, you know, I don't want to go, I'm not going to speak too much on this. You can go to my podcast to hear about it. But the short version is they are not being properly prepared to go into the workforce. Mm-hmm. Because the only thing you can do after mentally, after playing football, is maybe be a GA, maybe coach, or maybe be a trainer, it's all I can think of at the time that would correlate right away. Cause we, and this is the only example I'm gonna leave on this is You go to school to be a doctor, you're taking classes to become a doctor. You go to school to be an engineer, you're taking classes to be an engineer. So when you go to school to play football, your time is being split between football and school. And that's where the gray area comes in. So the mentality portion is the mental health of these athletes is when they can't find a job and they're not able to take care of themselves, that's not making them a well-rounded human being. And they can do more than that. Physically, a lot of athletes gain a lot of weight after they're done playing sports because they eat it.
So to go back to the original question,
okay,
how was your transition? And how did you master, even to whatever level you have mastered it at, maintaining your physical health, transitioning from playing a sport to living a more normal life now?
Okay, so how I transitioned, I would say, is I kept physical. So I went on runs, I went to the gym, I tried to stay active, you know.
And how long did it take you to find that one thing that you really, for you, I'm assuming it's running, to find that thing? How many different things did you have to go through, and how long did that take until you found your new sport?
It took about 3 years because the problem was I tried to do what I did for since I was high school and college was
right.
Work, go to the gym, lift weights, you know, prepare for football. But I wasn't prepared for football. I was done. The only preparation I could do was lift weights just to feel good and look good.
Right.
So, but the same drive wasn't there. So I didn't have the same drive to go to the gym and move a bunch of weights. It was like, why do I want to move all this weight? Like, I'm done. I've done this
right.
for too long. So I tried a different things. I tried yoga. I remember I did a 100-day yoga challenge. So I did 100 days of yoga. I think I did beach volleyball. I used to bike ride.
And when this guy says he did it, he actually really, really did it.
Yeah, I did that. I did those challenges. I'm like, man, like I'm still trying to find that, fill that void of time. Like I want to push myself physically. So I remember I met a friend who was a runner. And I remember I went on my first run. It was like 5 miles or something. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. They're like, you want to go for a run? I'm like, sure. So we went. And I remember I was just like gassed, like, oh my, I ain't never ran like 3-4 miles before. I do sprints. I run back and forth. I'm trying to catch the guy with the ball. I'm not trying to run no 3-4 miles. I mean, I was like, you got to keep in mind, I was 280 pounds too. Mm-hmm. I wasn't running, had no runner weight.
Right.
But my mentality is, of course, I'm not going to let you outrun me. Let's go. So I go and I quickly realize I haven't been running that far. As I'm calling my friend, like, hey, come get me on the phone with the car, though. Don't just come get me and have me run. Come get me with the car. So they end up coming to get me. And I was just like, wow. In my mind, I'm like, okay, I got to get this. But I remember I felt good the next day. It was like,
right.
I'm like, dang, I feel good. I feel light. So I was like, my friend was like, you want to go run again? I'm like, I'm cool. Like, nah, I'm not running with you no more. But they're like,
but you found your new mountain to climb, though.
Yeah, 2-3 weeks later, I was like, you know what? I'll try it again. But can we slow the pace? I don't think I told you. I'm not a runner. I'm trying to be a runner.
Right.
And then I quickly just learned. Like, I started to get into it more and more, and I felt good, and I realized I was losing weight. And it was just like, you go on these long runs, you put your headphones on, and I didn't have to be in the gym for 2-3 hours to get that rush. I can go on a 30-minute run and feel just as good, if not better. And I got addicted to it. I mean, I was running like maybe 10, 12, 13, 20 miles. I mean, I was for like 2 years, I was really into running. And still am, just ain't running.
Quick question, because I've heard people say something to this effect, and I don't know if it's true. I've heard them say that typically you choose to run on one surface. Like people that run on the treadmill find it harder to run out on the streets, and people that run on the streets find it harder to run on the treadmill.
Yes.
How true is that, and why is that?
Very true. So there's two different runners. There's the people who go out here and run the pavement and the streets, and there's the people who run indoors. And both, I'm not discouraging one or the other, but it's different. When you run a mile on the treadmill, you run a mile outside, it's totally different. I mean, you're working way more muscles, obviously, running outside. But there's something about being outside, having that wind.
Why is that you're working more muscle scientifically?
I mean, I don't know, I don't want to be quoted, but I would just say just by experience, because
You feel it in more places when you're on the street.
You feel it in more places. You're using your core more. You're going uphill. You're going downhill. Right, right. It's a true mile. You know, right. It's not like, you know, a treadmill is a mile, but it's not a true mile.
Right.
It's like night and day, I would say. You know, I definitely recommend anybody who's running to run outdoors. And you feel good because you're outside. You got the cold air.
Well, here's the question. What about the people that may have bad joints?
Okay, so this is something passionate for me. So I recommend running and swimming. I'm a big advocate on running and swimming because there's something happens when you push your body cardiovascular to that extreme point where you're just exhausted. Yeah. So I say swimming for the people who aren't able to run, maybe because of knee issue or a back issue, because you're going to be pretty much weightless in the water and you're going to be able to get that same effect, if not better. Okay. And if you are able to run, I recommend it. Even if you can't, even if it's a mile, you know, because a mile make a difference. And what you'll notice too is, and this is where I end it, because I can talk on this all day. Yeah. I crave learning how people act, you know, like what do people who run are very successful. You know, I learned that in, you know, yoga and running, and it kind of made me want to be an avid runner because everyone I'm talking to who I saw as maybe a potential mentor I wanted to be like, they ran 3-4 miles a day, you know, and they were very good shape because the physical goes with, you know, financial to a certain degree. But because if you're disciplined, you know, it all comes
to mental.
Mental. And a lot of these people want to push themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're all like adrenaline junkies. They do Ironmans. They run marathons.
Discipline and drive.
So, yeah. And that's really kind of what I saw myself. I've always been that kind of person. Like, let me load up the bar, though, and even at weights. Like, let me put as much weight as I can on here because I want to push myself. So I think that's a part of me as a person, you know. But I will say, like, running is new to me. It's not like I've done it. And I don't have a running body structure. Like, if you see me, I'm 6'3". I'm, like, 250 pounds right now, you know. So I'm not the ideal runner. But I ran my first half marathon this year, though. Kudos to me.
A little clap. There we go. I'll put it in on the audio later. Moving on. So I think it's very interesting. And of course, it has to do with the climate and what's been going on as of recent. But in social media and honestly, even in my personal life, like I see a lot more young men speaking to their mental and emotional well-being just in conversation. Mm. And I feel like part of it culturally is you're seeing so many people through various ways falling victim to mental illness, whether it is coping with it through narcotics and then overdosing or people just simply taking their lives. I feel like, for one, coming from the Midwest, growing up around a lot of people or gravitating to a lot of people that are from more like East Coast, or, you know, East Coast people are a little more tough. I will say that coming to the West Coast, I feel like people are a little, in general, a little more in touch with their emotions and vocal with their emotions, men as well, young men as well. But I feel like I have seen a change in the last 3 to 6 months. And I feel like it's for a lot of different reasons. But I'm curious to know if you've noticed it. If so, why you think it's happened? If not, then we can speak on that as well. But have you noticed a change in the climate of, more importantly, and I'm not trying to relegate anybody, but it usually doesn't happen amongst men, but seeing men and young men speak towards their own physical and mental and spiritual well-being and talking about self-care. Because it's something that you talk about.
Yeah.
You and so, I will speak about, but it's something that I don't notice in a lot of conversations.
So, yes. I do believe that it has become more aware in the climate, and I do believe in it, to answer your question. So, just to let people know, I am a big advocate of mental health and people getting help and seeking that and counseling and all those things. So, just speaking, yes, I mean, I just look around at, you know, at the conversations that I'm having with people and it always revolts to me. It always goes back to, you know, those two things I ask people, your spiritual health and your mental health, because those go together. And it's so important that we take the time to really know where we are mentally. You know, to know, because something's going to happen. You know, something is going to happen in your life And you need to know where you are and where you stand, because you don't know how far away from the cliff you are. And the thing about mental health is this, like, when you fall, you fall. It's not like having physical, I use this analogy all the time. You can tell if someone's physically not fit, and you can tell if someone's physically not healthy. But you cannot always tell if someone's mentally not healthy. Now, for extreme circumstances, you can go outside and maybe see some people who are mentally sick. But for the day, the person who's struggling with depression,
yeah, or mental health, a lot of people can hide it very well.
Hide it very well. I mean, you don't, the people that's going home and cutting themselves or taking pills or doing anything, I mean, you wouldn't know unless they opened up to you. So, yeah, I think it is important anytime you have the opportunity to speak about these things and let people know that these are not abnormal, you know, that everyone goes through things. Like, life is about peaks and valleys and ups and downs, and stuff is going to happen, and it's okay. We don't have to have a poker face all the time.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's been situations in my life where I was down. You know, I believe in counseling. I believe you should talk to somebody who is not your friend, who is not your family, when things are good. Yes. You know, when things are
that,
good.
And I heard that from somebody. They went to go see a counselor, and they said their counselor, the most important thing their counselor told them is don't wait until it gets bad. Like, come in when it is good. But I didn't mean to.
Yeah, and that's all you're speaking it. And the reason is because when it's bad, not to say they can't help. I mean, please seek help if you are going through it. But if you go while things are good, and when things get bad, you have the foundation to pull yourself up. You know, you have the information, you have that support group, because it's all about that support group. And, you know,
to add on to that, I do think, like, you should not just limit speaking on your problems to those close to you. But I do think you should feel comfortable. And I'm not saying you weren't saying that, but it's just something that I'm realizing now. You should be comfortable enough to vocalize what you're feeling to your friends. And I'm saying that more so as men, because I don't want to stereotype, but I feel like women don't have that problem as much as men do, sharing when something's actually wrong from a vulnerable standpoint. If we're pissed off, yeah, we'll talk about it. But when we're actually hurt, more often than not, like, we tend to keep that. And I feel like everybody should do this, but just more so speaking to men, because I know firsthand that's something that we typically don't do. And it was so crazy yesterday. I had two different young black men, early to mid 20s, and I talked to them like maybe 2 hours apart, no more than 2 hours apart. And, you know, one was telling me, like, he literally kind of was like, you know, I've been depressed lately. And it threw me off, because, like, I wasn't used to hearing that in general from somebody, especially a young black man, but let alone the fact that he was just saying it so clearly to me. But I think what happens when we do verbalize those things, when typically for most human beings, when somebody's transparent with you, it allows you to be more transparent to them, which then allowed me to connect with him and explain, like, how I understood that and how I had been in some of those places. And at least we connected on that level. Now, that may have made no difference, but at least, like, I see that person more three-dimensional now, because usually, you know, we, like, it's not like we're best friends, but, like, we speak every couple of weeks, typically a surface level conversation or what projects we're working on. But that's another layer. So now I know not only to think about this person based on who they are as a creative, who they are as a young black man, but, like, okay, this person is vulnerable. This person has feelings. They're dealing with this. So maybe at some point, like, I'll think, hey, I need to check in on this person. Or if I see something that may be relevant to them on that level, I can then share that with them. But I never would have thought about that had this person not shared and been that transparent with me. So I think absolutely, I believe in therapy, I believe in counseling, but I do think it is important to verbalize a little bit more with those that you feel that you can verbalize these things with.
No, I agree. I mean, speaking about your issues and your situation is very therapeutic. I believe that's very powerful. But, you know, to take it a next step further, is it's also important to have that foundation. I'm just a believer in having the people, the community that you deal with on a day to day, having your family and having a counselor or mentor, having people you can speak with on a day to day, because, like you said, I mean, it's easy when someone's telling you their trials, and I've been there. I tell somebody my trials and tribulations, what I'm going through at the time, and they open up and let me know, like, dang, you going through something too? Like, I didn't know. But the issue I would say is when you get to that point where you're vulnerable and you're telling people, you're close to the cliff. You know, you don't know if that person's like, you know, if they one step away from like feeling hopeless.
But that's why I feel like it is so important to verbalize those things sooner, to make it a normalcy, so that, because typically when we're to the point of sharing that now in this day and age, it's because we may not be at the cliff, but we're too far, then we're outside of the normal realm of natural health.
Exactly.
But that's why I feel like, and I think it, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but like, I think what is very dope is what J. Cole did. You know, I don't know if you saw the tweet right after Mac Miller died. He was like, you know, anybody out there in the industry, even if I don't know you, if you're going through something and you don't have somebody to talk to, like, talk to me. And from him, like, I feel like that was coming from a pure place. Yes. And what I guess more so what I'm getting at is I feel like as humans, but I'm speaking more so right now as young men, we have to make that more part of our normal conversation. Just and it comes down absolutely to finding people that you can trust and can consult with and can share those things and be vulnerable with. But whoever you deem that person to be, it definitely should be a counselor. It definitely there should be family, but whoever it is, you should be able to blow off that steam before it gets to such a high point. Like, it needs to be part of the conversation. I'm in my 30s now. You were probably the first person that like I didn't like have a really, really tight bond with beforehand that I just shared stuff with. Like, literally, that took me 20 something years of my life at that point.
Yes.
Tracy and I both met after bad breakups, and we bonded over heartbreak.
Yes, sir.
But it took me that long, and I had dealt with depression before that. So what happened if the depression before that was the one that took me over the edge, and I never got to that point of, for one, being able to verbalize those things just in a normal conversation with somebody that I didn't even know that well at the time, and to know somebody that could share that same information in kind, whether it's what you were currently going through or just understanding because you had been through it before. Like, it took that long for me to get to that point to not only transmit that, but be able to receive that from somebody else. So I think the sooner we can implement that and make that part of the normal conversation, the more people can let off some steam and get some of these things out of their system and have a shoulder to lean on before it ever gets to that point to where they're at that cliff.
Yes, and I agree. And thank you so much for sharing all that, Anthony. And you're right. You're 100% right that bringing it up in conversation, because that obviously we're going to get to the people before they go to counseling, before they talk to a mentor. It's going to be the interactions with friends and family. So I agree with that 100%. I want to add to that, though. I want to say, when's the last time someone asked you how you feel today?
Not too frequent.
And that's my point. My point is, even if we take in a male and a female, you and your girl, when's the last time you asked how you feel today? You feel okay? Are you happy? Are you sad?
It's not part of the normal conversation.
It's not part of the normal conversation. So, you know, it's really difficult when you do bring it up. It's kind of awkward. Like, what you mean? How I feel? And then for you, I feel good. How you feel? Like, you know what I'm saying?
That's a perfect example, because when it's not part of the conversation, we almost will become defensive, because it's like, what are you getting at?
Yeah,
where
are you coming think there's from? Something wrong with me? Yeah. Like, what's going on? So,
but that also comes, that then is on us to be able to receive something the right way and to be vulnerable, rather than jumping to a conclusion. So it's a two-sided thing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. But the reason I bring that point up is how you feel, because that's such a valuable question. And even if you don't ask, I ask myself, how do I feel this morning? Yeah.
No, because even if typically, if you were to ask me and I give you a bullshit answer, like, I'm at least going to think about it. Well, damn, how do I feel now? Exactly. So yeah, no, you're right. It is a very important question to ask.
And that question can be the difference in asking the people around you. It's real important, because like you said, now you're thinking about it. You mm-hmm. might not even know. A lot of people don't even know they're depressed until something like that they're on the edge. You know, are they may know things aren't right, but they don't know how bad they are because no one's asked them. It takes a certain intimacy, one, for someone to let you in. You talked about it. It took you 20 some years for you to let someone in that wasn't somebody that was verified. You know, that you knew. Like your parents or your cousin or maybe a best friend, to let someone else in, And we're all like that. We don't want to let somebody into our emotions. Like, hold on. Like, that's mine. Like, I'm not going to let you into my space. Like,
right, right.
So it is important. I agree with what you said earlier, to have those conversations. If you, because they're signed. If you see your friends, like, you know, for me, if I see someone's avoiding me, because we're busy, you know, it's not an easy, it's not a one-way street. You know, you got someone, you got people who got families, you got people who are working long hours, and then your friend calls you and they're going through something. Sometimes it's tough to kind of find that space, but it's our responsibility too as a human to make that space when we know someone's going through something.
Right.
So I agree with those questions, you know, asking, and when I always try to check in, like, hey man, how are you doing? Like, how, is everything okay? And I, whenever I speak to my friends, you know, I always, even though we might speak a few times a week, because stuff changes daily.
It's true. Very,
you know,
true.
it's not like emotions. It's like, I guess you can say it's like the stock market.
Yeah, it can be very volatile. Very volatile.
Yeah, so
at a moment's notice.
At a moment's notice, your wife can leave you, the kids can leave you, and you can find out.
And sometimes
sick.
It just takes one. It take, like, there may be a lot of things building up, but you feel it's manageable. But it just takes that one little thing to set it over the top.
Yes, and that is the point that I'm saying. It's like we there's so much going on in life that checking in on each other's emotion. And I think you agree. I mean, black males do, I would say, struggle with speaking. I mean, I'm usually awkward. People look at me like, what? You asking me how I feel? Like, how you feel? Like, you know, and I just see the walls break down, because I'll sit down with people and from different walks of life, and they'll be like, you know, kind of like that macho duff. And I'm like, hey, man, like, I'm not feeling so good today, man. Had a rough day, long week. I mean, how, you doing all right? And then they'll be like, yeah, you know what, man, I'm struggling, whatever. And it's just like, you, when you humble yourself and you submit, you know, you're more, people are more open to kind of share their experiences.
We have to lead by example.
Yeah, and lead by example. So, you know, you have to let other people know, I don't have it together. It's like, I got a lot of stuff going on too, man. It's not perfect. I reassure people, my life is not perfect. And by the way, it's far from it. So if you're going through something, maybe I went through it, one. Maybe I'm going to go through it in the future, or maybe I'm going through it with you. Like me and you, we was going through something at the same time. Wow. So we bonded instantaneously. But what if I went through it first and then you went through it? So now we have that compassion we can kind of talk about, because I know what you're feeling. I don't know exactly what you're feeling, but I can relate to that. Right. And that's important. It's like we want to build that community with our family and with our friends, because like I said, something's going to happen. I always say that something will happen in your life. No one's going to live a perfect life. That's right. Not going to happen. And sometimes we think that in finances, and we think that in emotions, that, you know, that we're beyond getting sick, or we're beyond a breakup, or we're beyond, you know, having something traumatic happen in our lives. And that's not the case. I've had many traumatic things happen in my life, and I'm not even 30 yet. So I can tell you it will. And I know many more things are going to happen. So you got to prepare. You almost got to prepare like a storm is coming. You know, you got to find a religion. You got to pray. Christian, I recommend Christianity to anyone. You got to meditate. You got to work.
But
we are
open-minded on this podcast. You can believe it. But go ahead.
But you got to believe in something other than yourself. I'll tell you that. Because if you just believe in yourself, I don't know if yourself is enough to get you through certain situations. Because if something happens that's bigger than you, I don't know how that's going to turn out. And I don't want to risk it. So I try to get myself ready for when that happens. I always try to, you know, pull myself out of it. Every day I try to take myself to that next level, you know, whether that's speaking, I create a little circle with my friends and family, whether that's going to a conference, whether that's, you know, looking at positive things on social media or on TV. And this is another thing I'm going to put out there before I start ranting. Be mindful of what you're putting in your mind.
Very
your
true. Very true.
Because, yeah, we use the analogy, you don't want to wait till something happens. And it's the same thing with, you don't want all this stuff going into your spirit and your mind that isn't feeding you.
Yeah.
Because it's not preparing you for something to happen. So if all you have is not high vibrational things that you're feeding yourself daily, whether that's music, whether that's movies, whether that's conversations, you don't even have the tools to get out of it.
True.
So try to spend 10, 15 minutes a day of feeding, whatever that positivity is, whether that's a book, whether that's listening to a service, whether that's service, going out and helping someone, whether that's watching a movie that's inspiring. Try to feed your spirit. It's very important.
All right. So let's talk about financial health. So being an entrepreneur yourself, being a business owner, I want you to speak towards how important financial literacy is to you as an individual and as a business owner.
Okay, so finances are very important. I would say, you know, it plays a factor how you feel. I mean, when you don't have no money, you don't feel good. So it's very, very important. Now, I don't believe it's the most important thing in the world, but it's very important. And it's important to know where you are. You know, I think a lot of us don't know where we are. As a business, I have to know where my numbers are. I have to know how much I'm spending for payroll. I have to know how much I'm spending on inventory. I have to know how much I'm spending for insurance. I need to know where every dollar is going. It's very important. If you have a business and you don't know where your money's going, I don't know how long that business is going to be open.
Right.
It's the same thing personally. You need to know where you are. You need to know if you have credit card debt. You need to know if you have an emergency fund of 6 months to a year. I recommend everyone has a year of savings because something will happen in life. You all hear me saying that because we walk around emotionally, something's going to happen, and financially at one point. Have a savings. Have a nest egg. Know how much you need. What if you do the what if scenarios, which is something I'm big on right now, which I want to talk to you about, a scenario. What if I lost my job? What if I got sick? Do I have enough money in the bank? Can I leverage my credit? Whatever you have to do at this moment, because you may not be prepared for a full storm, but know what you need so you're not surprised. You know, save. A year worth of savings will make you feel different. You'll move. Your decision making is going to be different.
Absolutely.
You're not going to take a job because you have to take it if you have enough savings where you can take your time and find something you want to do. So that it's a mentality that, If you're responsible with it, it can change your life. And don't overspend. Live within your means. I mean, I see people all the time, you know, and I'm a victim of it myself. I'm not.
I've
done it before, you know, bought cars that were a little bit too expensive, stayed in places that were a little bit too expensive. And when I'm saying I can afford it, but I'm saying, was it wise for me to buy that car? Was it wise for me to stay in that very expensive place? Because I'm not thinking long term. I'm thinking short term. And when you think short term, your long-term plan doesn't look too healthy.
Right.
So I would say find you someone, a financial leader, you know, whoever that may be, and stay informed. But save, pay off all your debt, because, like I said, something will occur, and know where every dollar that you're spending is going.
So let me ask you, for those people that don't have their financial leaders, who are some of your financial leaders that you can speak to?
I'm a big believer in. I like Dave Ramsey. I really do. He is awesome. He's very straight to the point. I mean, he does the baby steps, and I listen to his podcast, and it puts me in.
What's
that
the name
moment.
Of his podcast? Is it Total Money?
Is this the Dave Ramsey Show?
Dave, okay.
Yeah, and the Total Money Makeover. I'm actually in the process of doing that myself because, I mean, that's his program. You can kind of look it up. But one of his things will really intrigue me is, you get to a point financially where you can give and serve.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're financially where you're a place where you can give and serve, obviously your family's taken care of. And that's what we all want. We want to be able to take ourselves and our future family or our current family. And Dave Ramsey has a plan to get you there so you can not live paycheck to paycheck. So you don't have to retire broke.
Right.
Because we don't know how the economy's going to shift. Nobody does. Nobody can predict the future. I mean, economy can be cool for 30 years or it can go bad at any moment.
Right.
So we have to prepare. Dave Ramsey, somebody I really look up to. And that's pretty much, you know, but I'm always listening to podcasts about finances. I'm always reading an article. I'm always staying on the know because things are currently changing when it comes to currency. But, yeah, I mean that. And if you're married, make sure you you're discussing your finances with your partner. And like I said, take the time to do them with yourself. If you're single, like know how much. It's been plenty of times where I knew how much I was making, but I didn't know how much I was spending. I mean, besides my rent and my car and my mortgage, I mean, I'm spending $1,000 on food every month eating out. That's $12,000 a year just on eating out. Damn. So it's people out there that don't even realize that they're spending beyond their means. They're living beyond their means.
What advice would you give to entrepreneurs, current business owners, or aspiring business owners? Specifically, like outside of just, you know, the normal financial.
So the biggest advice I give anybody who's in business is take a deep breath and breathe. And, you know, I would say take care of yourself. It's the biggest thing I think I've learned over the last few years is it's so easy to get caught up in your company and put all your energy into your company and not have anything left in the tank for yourself.
That work-life balance.
Work-life balance. You said it. And it's so critical because if you're not healthy, your company's not healthy. And that's financially. That's health. Because you are your company when you're a company.
You are the money.
So just look at yourself. I mean, whatever field you feel like you can improve, your business can improve too. So if you personally, your finances are not, if you don't handle your personal money well, clearly you're not going to handle your company's money well. If you don't handle your personal relationships well, clearly you're not going to handle your team well. So it all correlates. I mean, I think the simplest way I can put it, I'm no expert, like I said, I've only been in business 5 years, is that they all go together and everything's more connected than you can ever imagine. And the worst thing you can think is, when I get started in my business, I'm going to have more time for anything. Because reality, I don't care what industry you in, when you get into business, you going to have less time. You have to do more with less. And that's that's another advice I would say. Practice doing more with less. Just practice it. Even if your business is at a developing stage, practice, you know, working and working out and eating healthy and trying to do all these things while managing pretend you have a multi-billion dollar company. Because the reality is, time management is another thing that's, I'm still learning, that you have to like work-life balance. You got to manage your personal life. You got to manage your business. You got to manage just other people. You got to, because as an owner or as a CEO of a company, you got to manage other people too. You got to manage their time. You got to manage your company. You got to manage, make sure vendors are getting paid on time. So time management is probably the second most important thing I would recommend, besides making sure that you're healthy as an individual first.
Okay. Good, good.
So, you agree with those?
No, absolutely. Because I feel like time, I always tell people, time is the most valuable, by far the most valuable asset I have. And yes, the older I get, the more it becomes true. So, and so with that being said, I feel, I've been speaking on it a lot lately, just to people personally, trying to even understand for me what work-life balance is and then trying to master it. So, and part of it is, like, ever since, like, the whole moving to LA thing was a very tumultuous thing. It was very entertaining, but it'll put you through a lot. But part of that goes to not being prepared when you do it. But sometimes I feel like you have to, just jump out there. But for me, I say that to say that pretty much the whole time up until now, like, I've been in survival mode. No matter how good, no matter how bad things have been, I've always been in survival mode. It's like, well, this isn't going to last. So let me get this. Let me do this. Let me build this. Have this just in case. Not necessarily savings either, which is stupid. But at least I felt like if I was putting my money into things, I was investing into things that would benefit the company or that could sustain me if something else fell through. But in doing that, I definitely have put myself in positions at times where I was close to or have burnt out. Luckily enough, like, I'm young enough, I can hopefully to this point still recover from these things, but I'm realizing, like, you know, I'm not getting any younger. And two, like, personally, I'm in a position where, like, I don't necessarily need to be in survival mode. I still need to always be hungry. I need to be on the grind, but I can afford to take it down a notch now. So now that I'm doing that, I'm trying to be as cognizant as I can be. So if we go back to, like, mental health and everything else, because it all ties in, there was a time last year when I started speaking to somebody, counseling or whatnot. So I started to realize triggers, things that I would go through or things that would make me feel a certain way that I allowed to happen that would then make me less healthy mentally. So now this year I am trying to be aware of things that I do physically, whether it's even working towards a goal that may be a positive in one way, if it is taking away from me physically from being healthy or being able to do something down the line, then I have to weigh those things out. But I am now having somewhat of a luxury of not being in survival mode, because for some people, life is survival mode. So here's the realization, I guess, to sum it all up. A lot of times what we realize is to be successful, we have to be disciplined. And it takes discipline to achieve your goals. But what I'm also realizing is that discipline isn't always to push yourself. Sometimes we have to be disciplined enough to sit still, to not do anything, to rest, to take that time to feed ourselves. For me, realizing that I need to implement more discipline in my life, in slowing down and taking care of my body, is probably the most important thing that I've learned this year.
Yeah, and I agree with that statement. And I will say this, it's taken me a few years to kind of find the rhythm. You know, I think, you know, as a new entrepreneur, you struggle with that rhythm of how much time do you spend on self-care, how much time do you spend in your company. And it's very important to try. I would recommend anyone to find that rhythm a lot faster than I did, because, like I said, the healthier you are, the healthier your company is going to be. Everything correlates. So eat healthy, work out, save money, eat healthy, work out, save money. And everything else will definitely fall into place. And thank you for having me on the show, Anthony. I know your next guest is here. So,
Before we go, tell everybody where they can find you at.
Oh, you guys can find me on YouTube at TracyPugh.com and also on social media, TracyPugh.com on Facebook. And that's all I have right now. I don't have Instagram yet. I'm still working on it.
And one day he'll have a title for his podcast. One day. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming out.
No problem. Thank you.